Guess I gotta start doing backflips after every point I score to get attention around here. LMAO, on to the next.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. And you can find me, as always, on Twitter at RedRock_BBall. Go and follow Basketball Monster as well on Twitter at BaskMonster. And of course, check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at LockedOnNBAnet, so you can find out when the newest episode of your favorite team show is released across the Locked On Podcast Network. We're going to break down the action from Tuesday. We're going to preview Wednesday's 9 games, and we're going to shine that player spotlight on the new starting point guard of the San Antonio Spurs, and that is DeJounte Murray. So,
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. He is also the waiver wire line of the night. Didn't really think I'd be talking about Garrett Temple in this portion of the show, but here we go. 34 points for Temple, 2 rebounds and 5 assists. He had 4 triples, but his immense value came from the fact that he was 14 of 17 from the field, hit both of his free throws. So that is obviously extraordinary efficiency from Temple. Now, based off this game, that's awesome. Look at that, fantastic. He took over down the stretch here against the Magic. A, it's a terrible team that he's playing against. And B, Temple is one of that quintet of Kings players who's not going to play every game, who is going to be part of the veteran group that is rested. And we know that this is not a guy that does this regularly. He averages 8 points per game for the season in 25 minutes. He shoots 41% for the year, although over his last 5 games, he's at 66%, and over his last 13, he is at 51%. So an elevation in his shooting and his scoring over that time frame. But otherwise, he is just a very nondescript, non-attractive fantasy guy. He's more of a 20-team league guy. And now, with the reduction in games played coming his way, and most likely minutes, now he did get some extra playing time in this one because De'Aaron Fox wasn't able to play the second half, this just stands out like dog's balls as one of those fluky performances that we'll look back on and go, huh, all right, that'll never happen again. And that's pretty much where we're at with Garrett Temple. He has had some decent games in the past, but nothing along these lines with that level of efficiency and that level of usage for this Kings team. So look at it, go, yeah, that's fine. But for a guy who is a low volume stat accumulator in pretty much every category, who then won't be playing every game, yeah, you're struggling to find value for him even in, say, 18 to 20 team leagues. So you can leave him alone and chalk this one up to just a little bit of an RC performance. I'm going to tell you now about today's sponsor, and that is the good folks over at Draft. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? Draft is a daily fantasy sports site that doesn't utilize the traditional salary cap format. It's a snake draft, just like you would do in your seasonal leagues when we head into preseason, September, October. That's what you do on Draft. You have a 2-man, a 3-man, a 4-man contest, and you go back and forth making those picks. Draft is my new favorite fantasy site. There's no more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft 2. Play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, and that is LO Fantasy. That's right. Play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LO Fantasy. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go straight to draft.com and come and play for free right now with that promo code LO Fantasy. Check it out and check out Locked On Draft Wednesdays when you can join the Locked On specific contests in the draft lobby and take on other Locked On listeners and Locked On hosts right across the network. All right, let's go on to the young gun of the night. I'm not going to talk too much about the young gun of the night because, as I mentioned, DeJounte Murray is our player spotlight a little bit later on. And when I do the player spotlight, I choose it all before the games kick off, yeah, based on requests that people put through and, I guess, topical things. And I'd already done Murray and started preparing all the stuff. And then he came out with the young gun of the night. So I wasn't going to make a late switch there and throw someone else into that spotlight. So I'll just talk about what he did now, and then we'll get into more of his details in that player spotlight later on as we go a little bit more in depth into his prospects as we move forward. 19, 10, and 3 for DeJounte against the Cavs. 7 steals, 8 of 15 from the field, and 3 of 4 from the line. There are a couple of things to take into consideration here is that guards, especially point guards, against the Cavs always do well. We've seen that pretty much all season. They have had tremendous success. So we use that as a limited grain of salt. He shot the ball really well. He is not a good shooter. He's got a true shooting of 47% this season on 19% from 3 and 42% from the field. So, yeah, he's not a good shooter. This is an anomaly. But for a guy who is going to be the starting point guard for the rest of the season, I would look to see if I can add him in every 12-team league. We saw it, and I'll talk more, but at the start of the year when he was the starter for the first 7 games, he was the 184th ranked player, so struggled. But some things now are a little bit different. He looks a little bit more comfortable, and the minutes are pushing up more for Murray as well. He looks more comfortable in that role. So if in a 12-team league, I'd be looking to add him. In a 10-team league, I guess it depends on who you drop. Now, the most common question I've gotten is, do I drop Rubio for him? And I guess that's a little bit up in the air. Look, in most cases, Rubio's obviously got the proven track record, and we don't expect Murray to do what he did in this game, moving forward with the 7 steals or that high efficiency. But I don't see a miraculous return to form for Ravishing Rick. I think this is sort of who he is, which is fine in most cases, but if you've got him and Murray is available, I don't think I'd be too concerned about making that move. I don't think that I'm losing massive amounts by dropping Rubio, and that upside is there with Murray. But also remember that Parker is still around. Pat Mills is still there, so it's not like he's just going to get an unfettered access to 35 minutes a night as your starting point guard. But as I said, we will talk more about DeJounte Murray in the player spotlight later on in the show. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yeah, Jason Tatum is not hot at the moment. He was not good in this game. 4 points and 5 rebounds with 1 triple, 1 of 6 from the field, and 1 of 2 from the line. Shout out to Jalen Rose saying that he would maintain his 47% shooting from 3. I think since Jalen said that, he's at about 32%. He's dropped down to 45% from 3, and I am ready to, if anyone wants to debate me on this, you can, but I am ready to declare that I will not be shaving my beard off this season, as the bet was that if Tatum remained or finished the season as a 50% three-point shooter, that I would shave my beard off live on camera. I am ready to call that. That is not going to happen. Almost 100% guaranteed. Let's have a look at how far off is he actually? He's made 66 threes and attempted 147. So we're talking about he'd need to hit his next, I'm trying to do some quick maths here, Big Shaq style. He'd need to hit his next 7 in a row to get back to 50%. So I suppose it's not impossible, but the way he's shooting at the moment, it's not looking great. As I said, over the last 12 games, he is at 32% from 3, and he's gone 12 of 37 over that time frame. Over the last month, he's 135th ranked player, and to be honest, this 12.5, 5 points, 1 steal, 1 block, 1 triple on 43 and 76 in 32 minutes, they are almost identical to the numbers that when we looked at him coming out of college before the draft, when I do all my projections of players, situation independent, like how does this guy's numbers translate? This was sort of what he came out to be, a guy who was middling in every sort of category. Yeah, 1 steal, 1 block, a triple 1, that's nice. Even his steals feel a little bit high maybe. Below average rebounds, a 3, okay scoring, all right percentages. Nothing spectacular. A guy who was well behind someone like, say, John Isaac, Lonzo Ball, Markel Fultz in all those projections. The Baptist John Collins, Zach Collins, those sort of guys. But smack bang in that 130 to 150 type of range in a 30-minute role. And that's what we've seen from him the last month. So which one is real? That the Jason Tatum that's a 49% shooter to start the season and 45% from 3? Or this one now that we're seeing whose efficiency's dropped? The answer probably lies in the middle. And he still should be owned in all leagues, obviously. But don't look at this as a temporary blip. I would be more inclined to look at the start of the season as an unsustainable hot streak, that he's going to settle into maybe being a 45% shooter from the field, maybe a 38% shooter throughout his career, rather than this incendiarily hot shooter who's getting by on low usage and not racking up numbers in the other categories, especially with the really piss poor assist numbers. So what we're seeing now is what I saw back in June when we did all that pre-draft stuff, or when I did that pre-draft stuff. This is the guy that I saw, and he obviously shocked me to begin the season in the first half, but it is starting to regress. There'll be a level of a bounce back, but I don't think we should be expecting him to head back to those numbers that we saw to kick things off this season. And I don't think that's a, I don't think that's an outlandish statement at all, but many people might disagree. Now it's question time. Today's question comes from John PGH, or on Twitter, at John PGH. That is John Anderson. And he says, I'd really like to know what your hourly routine is throughout the day. It would be interesting to hear for us Americans, since the games are on at such a different time of day. Then that's a question I've had variations of many times over the last couple of weeks since we introduced the question of the day segment. So I thought, you know what, let's go through and sort of detail what a standard day is like for me on a day when I'm covering the NBA for Basketball Monster. So I get up really early, probably 5:30 a.m., do a quick scan through of, probably get up at 5, do a quick scan through of Twitter, of YouTube, of Facebook, you know, looking at comments and tweets and questions that have been posed, and me go through the news on Twitter as well, go through Basketball Monster, have a look at what's sort of gone on there with comments and player notes, stuff that's happened while I've been sleeping. From there, I get up and I go to the gym. So I'm at the gym from normally 6 till 7, come home and get myself ready. And then by 8 o'clock a.m. here, which is 5 p.m. Eastern over in the States, I'm ready to start the day. Now, I don't take over, because we work sort of shifts at Basketball Monster in monitoring the news and making the adjustments. Normally, on most days, Kyle McEwen is on until 7 p.m. Eastern. And at 7 p.m. Eastern comes, I take over looking at the site. But in that time between that... I said that 8 a.m. here is 5 p.m. Eastern. 8 a.m. here is 4 p.m. Eastern. So that's sort of when I start my day. In that time between 8 a.m. and 11 a.m., which is between 4 p.m. Eastern and 7 p.m. Eastern, me and Kyle and Greg and Matt, we're going through our Slack chat, and making comments on things when news breaks, making the adjustments there together. And then from 7 p.m. Eastern onwards, I'm handling the Basketball Monster site. In those hours in the morning from when I start to when I'm taking over watching the news and doing all the breaking news stuff on Basketball Monster, what I'm starting to do is prepare for the show. So set up all the graphics for the YouTube version of the show, working out who the player spotlight's going to be, doing the research, setting up the stuff for that one, organizing question of the day answers, setting all that up, setting the graphics up for the game ahead, looking ahead to the next day and doing daily minutes projections for DFS stuff on Basketball Monster, and going through, I do a weekly sweep of all the teams for their seasonal projections, seasonal stats, seasonal minutes, all that sort of stuff. So I do 6 teams each day, 5 days a week. So go through, do the first 6 teams, then go to the next one. And if things break during the week, if there's an injury to someone or something really big has changed, a big rotation role, then you go back into that team. But as a scheduled maintenance thing, we have automatic systems that process the projections. Plus, I go through and hand project and hand adjust these teams once a week on a 6 teams per day basis. That's all the stuff that I get done before 7 Eastern. And then I'm watching the games. We're watching Twitter, making the adjustments on Basketball Monster as necessary. Setting up things like graphics for the show for perfect DFS lineups. And making my picks of the day through DFS projections on Basketball Monster as well. The last game finishes. Oh, yeah, so as the day is going on, I'm watching the games. Once a game finishes, I go and make a few notes on it on the Basketball Monster box score comments page. I don't cover every single player because sometimes it's just unnecessary. There's no need for me to go and tell you LeBron played well. You can read that. It's more like if something interesting is happening, a trend moving in a certain direction, a player that needs to be picked up or added or injury, or why did this player play so poorly, or what happened with fouls, those sort of things. So I write those as the games finish. The last game finishes, I move into my studio, which is not really a studio. It's a back room here where I've set up the video stuff, the cameras, the lights, the recording equipment, all that sort of stuff, and get the show going as soon as everything is ready to go. And that's currently where we are. So that's my day covering the NBA for Basketball Monster and for the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. And then once the show is done, it's edited, the YouTube video is uploaded, I go and have dinner, and I then go through and again go through Twitter, read stuff, and you know, the days, they're long days. No doubt. I'm up at 5. You know, I'm probably still looking at Twitter until 10, 11 p.m. most nights as well. But obviously at nights, you know, the attention on it is reduced a little bit there. So that's an insight into how my day works, John, and the other people who have asked that question. There have been quite a few of those. Now I want to introduce you something we're going to do most likely every week from here on out. It's right across the Locked On Podcast Network. It's the Locked On Podcast Network National Power Rankings. All the hosts of the shows contributed into this and ranking these teams. And it is going to something we're going to do consistently. We're going to have some polls and surveys and things like that across the hosts that we're going to bring to you to show you what the collective thought is across the group. So this is the power rankings, the top 10 power rankings. We'll start at number 10. The Miami Heat comes in at 10. The Wizards in at 9. The Cavs at 8. The Thunder at 7. The Wolves at 6, the Spurs at 5, the Raptors and the Celtics came in tied at 3rd, the Rockets were number 2, and I don't think anyone would be surprised that the Golden State Warriors were the number 1 team in the inaugural Locked On Podcast Network National Power Rankings. We're going to go through this each week, so we'll be able to see if it changes at all next week, what sort of moves teams have made as we go through and do these surveys. But that's right across all the hosts, across all of the Locked On NBA Network, Locked On Podcast Network NBA shows with our power rankings. And we'll do stuff with this through like awards and heaps of different stuff, playoff projections and all that sort of thing across the network. So something new that we are introducing to the show. All right. Let's get into these games now and look at the 5 games that we had on Tuesday. The first one of these games was the Sacramento Kings and the Orlando Magic. Just more bullshit from the Kings. Another change in starting lineup. We did hear early on that George Hill and Costa Kufos were out of this one. But what we didn't hear is Zach Randolph, who was listed as questionable with a sore knee. He was inactive. Now, those inactive lists get turned in 1 hour before the game start. But we heard it about 30 seconds before tip-off when the announcers thought it was such a big deal that they had to show, look at this, amazing. Zach Randolph wasn't marked as out, but his name, his number wasn't circled on the game sheet, therefore he's inactive. Now, this shit was known an hour before. Surely someone could have seen, if it's such a big, oh, Zach Randolph wasn't happy that his number wasn't circled, maybe it was oversight. Someone should have, I can't believe this didn't get out. The bullshit that this Kings organization goes through with the signings, which were ludicrous, the rotational decision-making, the Ducks and Drakes, like, you're shit. You're the worst team in the NBA by a considerable margin. I don't know who you're fooling by holding this thing, you know, changing your mind on shit all the time, Jaeger. It's bullshit. It's piss poor for the fans as well. The bullshit of, you know, guys like Vince Carter starting and playing 29 minutes on a back-to-back just laughs in the face of everything that you could possibly think of. It is just a consistent disgrace, and they won the bloody game. Imagine how much I'd be going in if they lost. But so many things piss me off with the way this runs. Now, you could talk about commitment to youth, and we're going to start featuring these guys, but then Vince Carter, who doesn't play every game, then comes and plays 3 straight games during the commitment to youth and starts the last 2, and those last 2 were a back-to-back. So don't give me any of this bullshit of like, oh, we need to rest guys because it's a back-to-back. If you can start Vince Carter on back-to-back nights, there is something weird. It's just bullshit. Now, there's nothing to say about Vince, and you could make the argument that he played in Charlotte because he went to North Carolina, so that's why he started there, and then he started in Orlando because he used to play there on the Vince Carter farewell tour. It is still just ludicrous, and you can start him, but you don't need to play him 29 minutes. Now, the rumors out today that George Hill is potentially getting traded in exchange for Iman Shumpert and Channing Frye and draft pick compensation, all that sort of stuff. In terms of Hill, if he went to the Cavs, then I think his value is higher on the Cavs than the Kings, even though there's so many more mouths to feed. At least we know he would play every night. At the moment, he could play 20 minutes one night, 0 minutes the next night, 22 minutes one night, 0 minutes the next night, and that's not useful. He goes to the Cavs and plays 25 a night or 26 a night, and shit, he is significantly better than J.R. Smith, Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose. he should be getting 29 to 32 minutes a night there. He would have some value, even if his shot attempts would go down. He could still get steals, he could still get assists, he could still hit threes. So he's not a horrendous guy to grab in that case. But nearly always when we hear a rumor about a framework of a deal, that means that deal has been discussed and been rejected. Nearly always. Now, when it comes from Windhorse, when it comes from Woj, with those specifics, most like, I tend to pull back and go, well, maybe that could come through. But in general, unless you hear this is going to happen, these are the details, once they say there was a trade discussed with these specific pieces in it, most likely that trade doesn't happen. But it could. There's always exceptions to every pseudo rule that I make up. But the majority of time when the details are released, that trade has been discussed and it's ultimately been rejected by one or two of the parties, whoever it is. On to this actual game, Willie Cauley-Stein, 21-9-4, a steal, 5 blocks, 33 minutes, as clear a must-own as there is on this team, while the other must-own guys, Bogdan Bogdanovic, struggled with 8-4-4, and De'Aaron Fox only lasted 11 minutes with abdominal soreness. 7 points in his 11 minutes. He will be fine for the next game, so still remains an ownable player. Labissiere started the first half, but of course, as you develop your youngsters, you've got to drag him off and not have him start the second half. 10-9 in his 23 minutes, while Justin Jackson started at the 4 and had 4-8 in 25 minutes. And the other rumor coming out of the Kings is that Skel Labissiere could be dangled to be traded away in order to free up a roster spot to bring in Shumpert and Fry. There'd want to be a significant amount of assets coming back the other way if you're willing to give up Labissiere just to open a roster spot to bring in Fry and Shumpert. Otherwise, Vlade should be just booted out the door immediately, if that is the case. So that is an interesting thing. But Labissiere is fine to own. Well, Budrick was pretty good, buddy. He healed 13-5-2, 4 steals a block. And the 4 steals is really elevating his value this season, his increased steal rate in general. He is fine to grab in a 12-team league. Onto the Magic, Lord Alfred Payton, 21-7-7 with 3 steals, really cranking it up at the moment. While Aaron Gordon, the shooting is horrendous, 16-12 on 17 shots, 2 threes with a steal. Just cannot hit shit at the moment. You still got to own him, but his ranking is in the toilet because of this drop in his field goal percentage. Fournier dropped in 22-2-4, while Jono Simmons had 14-4 in 35 minutes, and it doesn't change my stance on the fact that I don't think that he is a guy that I would consider to be a must-own player. Biombo in 28 minutes had 4-6 with 4 blocks, so that's doing what he needed to do. While they brought Mo Spates in as the primary backup center, and then Kem Birch came in as third string, but as it happened against Boston, Birch played more minutes than Spo. Mo Spates, not Spo. That's the Miami coach. As for Birch, 3-6 with a steal in 13 minutes. He's just a very deep league guy. And of course, when Nick Vucevic returns, then his value and his spot in the rotation could disappear entirely. I think that's a pretty realistic expectation. The Brooklyn Nets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Huge effort for the Nets. They didn't get the win in the end. Jumpin' Joe Harris knocked in 5 triples in 23 minutes for 19 points. He is a 3-point streamer, and that's about it. But he's in danger of losing some minutes when D'Angelo Russell's playing time gets increased. Spencer Dinwiddie, 13-3-7 in his 29. Also a possibility he loses a couple there too, while the Blue Swimmer had 12-6. A guy that's lost a bit recently is Caris LeVert. Only 19 minutes. Now, still had 5 rebounds, still had 6 assists, but only scored 6 points, only took 4 shots, and the 19 minutes are a little bit troubling. I really like LeVert, but it doesn't matter how much I like him. It's how much is Kenny Atkinson willing to play him. And at the moment, we've seen his playing time dip. So if you want to drop him in a 10-team league, it's totally fine. In a 12-team league, I guess it depends on who you're adding, but you have to consider that an option there as well. Hollis Jefferson, 11-6, a disappointing night there. While D'Angelo played 15, at least he put some numbers up, 7-2-4. And if you added him, or if you've been holding him, don't drop him because of these 3 games. They haven't been good. He scored, 10 points in 3 games? It's been piss poor. He's looked out of sorts, but I'm not worried about it. He's returning from a knee injury. He's on a strict minutes restriction. I think it'll be fine, but it's not good at the moment, clearly. Jill Okafor, speaking of not good, 4 points in 10 minutes, while Jarrett Allen had a nice 12-11 double-double in 23 minutes. Jarrett Allen is better than Jill Okafor. He suits this team more. The question with Allen is can he be a top 150 guy this season? I would think no, just because they are going to continue to use the 4 centers. But I reckon next season we could be seeing a 26-minute-a-night role for him, which would push him into the top 150. So I think his dynasty value is going to go up pretty significantly next season. I just don't see it happening this year. Onto the Thunder, Russell Westbrook had 32, 5, and 6 with 2 steals. Paulie George had 28 and 9, and Mello 10 and 8, and Steve Adams 6 and 14. So a couple of struggles for Adams and Anthony, especially with their efficiency. Westbrook, the free throws, man, just happens again. 8 of 11 for 73%. You got 8 of 11, it's not too bad, but on 11 shots at that volume, it's a negative for your category. Not much else to really report from the Thunder. Ray Felton, 14, 2, and 4. Strong game from him off the bench. He's as solid as they come for deeper leagues, but he's never really going to get an opportunity to get, you know, bigger numbers unless Westbrook goes down. And even then, I don't think he would be a 12-team league guy, as Paul George and Mello would take on a larger slice of the playmaking and shot attempts rather than that just going to face Ray Felton. All right, let's move on to the next game. It's the Cavs and the San Antonio Spurs. Just an absolute train wreck. The Cavs lost again, and Kevin Love, 10 and 11 in 27 minutes. The use of him by Ty Lue is bad. It's really, really bad. The fact that you play him just 27 minutes, the fact that you give him a usage of 15% is really piss poor coaching. Dwayne Wade's out there with a 26% usage, Thomas 27, Derrick Rose 24, and your second best player is sitting there just doing nothing. I've criticized Lue lots of times this season for piss poor distribution of offense, and it's even worse now. And this is one of the reasons why I was massive on trying to sell Kevin Love before Isaiah Thomas came back. You're not going to be able to do it now for any value, and he's in a really interesting spot. Jay Crowder played 32 minutes, 13 and 4 with 3 triples. His rank looks nice over the last couple of weeks, but he's shooting at like 60%. Obviously a number that's not going to be able to be maintained. Now, Ty Lue also said he will be making changes to the lineup. He didn't say what they are, but there's a couple of options. The number one most popular option is J.R. Smith gets his ass out of the starting lineup, because no offense to him, he has been absolutely shit-ass the last two seasons, the plumber. He had 0 points in 29 minutes, so he can move out of the starting lineup and they could replace him with Kyle Korver, who is actually leading the Cavs in net rating. Or you could see Dwayne Wade go back into that spot. That is a possibility. The other move that could be made is Jay Crowder moving to the bench, Kevin Love moving back to the four, and Tristan Thompson moving into the starting lineup. And obviously that would kill any momentum that Crowder is building. But it's not like we're going to add Tristan Thompson in 12-team leagues or maybe even 14-teamers. And we wouldn't be adding Kyle Korver even if he started for the plumber there either. So there is going to be some changes. We don't know exactly what they're going to be. Isaiah Thomas, 28 minutes, 14 points, 2 assists and a steal. Really struggling. Cannot get himself right after this hip thing. And I've mentioned it plenty of times how serious an issue this is and how much it does linger. I don't know why he never had the surgery. It just is a baffling decision for him not to do that. It's his hip's not right. It's not going to be right. I don't understand why they didn't do that. You still got to hold him. The people calling for Derrick Rose to start over Isaiah Thomas for this team, honestly, just give it away, man. Just log off Twitter, delete your account, just do everything. It is nonsense. Rose is still bad. I don't care what you say, he's bad. It's simple as that, and he should not be owned in any fantasy leagues outside of, say, 18-teamers at this point.
LeBron James.
28, 9, and 7 for LeBron with a block. The free throw is really, really in a massive hole at the moment. After a strong season, he's regressing back to last season's numbers. When you drafted him, you would have drafted him with that in mind, so maybe it's not too much of a negative impact, but it's clearly not ideal. But otherwise, the numbers are pretty strong there. Onto the Spurs, LaMarcus Aldridge, 30 and 8, 2 steals and a block, a strong performance, while Kyle Anderson had 10, 12, and 5, a steal, and a block in 34 minutes, and he is a guy that should be owned in all 12-team leagues. Davis Bertans started for Powell. He had 13 and 5, hit 2 triples, had a steal as well. But of course, once these guys come back, like Powell, like Manu eventually, Rudy Gay, Kawhi, then Bertans is barely going to be in the rotation. Tone Parker had 14 with 6 assists in his 18 bench minutes. Leave him for your 16 to 18-team league as well. Patty Mills only the 20 minutes, and Mills is basically playing as a backup too, not really getting any point guard minutes anymore. So it's going to be interesting when Manu comes back, and it's part of DeJounte Murray's concern as well, is that when Manu comes back and he gets the backup 2 minutes, where does Mills go and what does that do to Murray's minutes? Does Murray then become a 20, instead of a 30-minute starter like he was in this game, does then he become a 24-minute starter and Mills gets fewer minutes there, and does that take some of Kyle Anderson away as they play Manu and Danny Green together just to get enough minutes to these guys? So there are going to be some changes that go down once Manu returns. And of course, when Rudy Gay and Kawhi Leonard return. So it's not all, you know, roses for guys like Anderson and Murray. There are obviously numerous factors playing a part in why their value at the moment is as high as what it is. The New York Knicks and the Golden State Warriors. No Kristaps Porzingis. No Kyle O'Quinn. So we had a change to the starting lineup. Mick Beasley started at power forward. He had 21, 4, and 4 in 35 minutes. And as has been pretty much the narrative for him all season, once he plays, the numbers come. And that's what we saw. When Porzingis is back, though, there's no reason to hold on to Mick. Timmy Hardaway played 35 and had 11 and 4. So the minutes for him going back up, while Frankie Ntilikina stuck under 20 minutes, 6 and 2. No point holding him in any sort of 12-team league or 14-team league probably at this point. Enes Kanter, amazingly, he played 26 minutes against the Warriors, 16, 9 and 5, while Bill Hernan Gomez moved into the backup role and had 8, 3 and 5 in 18 minutes. And with this injury to Kyle O'Quinn, I get so many questions about Bill Hernan Gomez because he's a guy that everyone loves, and I don't know why they love him as much as they do. Oh man, he's getting dicked. He needs to be playing these big minutes. Like, he's fine, but he's not that good. Now, for him to actually become a worthwhile fantasy guy, he'd need 26 minutes a night. So that means he would then need to skip over two guys in the depth chart. He would need to jump over Kyle O'Quinn so O'Quinn could get traded, and then he would move into the backup spot. But then he'd also have to jump ahead of Enes Kanter. So even if Koch was to get traded or his injury was to be severe, I don't think that Bill is a 12-team must-own guy as he comes in at 18 minutes a night. Like, 8, 3, and 5 is not bad, but it's not something I'm hanging my hat on in a 12-team league. So he would need, you know, two situations to go in his favor for him to even sniff getting close to that. And then Hornacek could always bring Joakim Noah in and play him 15 minutes and take some of Hernan Gomez's playing time away. So I don't view him as a high-quality stash guy. There's just so many things that need to change for a guy that honestly isn't as good as what the narrative seems to be around him. Yeah, he had a strong end to last season, but he's just not as good as what is made out to be, I don't think. And I like the guy. On to the Warriors. Steph, 32, 6, and 7 with 8 triples. Durant got ejected for the fourth time this season. I don't know why he's so pissy this year. 14, 2, and 4. He also had the Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Yeah. And Draymond had 12, 5, and 6 with a steal and a block. Shit night from Klay Thompson. Only 10 shot attempts, 9 points. Nothing too spectacular there. And as with the rest of the Warriors, nothing to really get excited about. David West. David West is a top 150 player this season in 13 minutes a game. He had 12, 4, and 4. It's on the back of insane blocks and field goal percentage. So he's an interesting stream guy in, say, a 14-team league if you need help in those areas, but hard to be considered a must-own guy just in those minutes. But he's done it consistently all through the season, and it's been a pretty significant surprise. The last game of the night, the Lakers, they hosted the Boston Celtics and get the big victory. Marcus Smart on fire, 22, 2, and 8 with 4 triples in 33 minutes. An absolute must-own in a punt field goal situation. And you might not think you're a punt field goal team, but have a look. If you lose field goals most weeks than others, punt it. You're going to lose it anyway. Just add Smart because he can produce in other areas, get you some steals, assists, rebounds. And he has these weird games where he scores like this. Al Horford had 13, 12, and 6. Marcus Morris had 13 and 7 in his 26, while Irving had 33, 3, and 4. Jaylen Brown, not awesome either. He was 4 of 11 for 9 points with 2 rebounds and 2 assists. And Jaylen Brown is one of those guys that I'm probably going to reference a ton next season, that once we get to the start of the season, the people that overreact, legitimately multiple people told me that they were able to trade Jaylen Brown away for Bradley Beal. And that just looks unbelievably laughable. Also, another reason why you never veto trades based on league votes, because you don't think it's fair. It's bullshit. People that actually thought that was a legitimate trade, because, oh, Brand, man, second year, he's taking a step forward. He's going to easily be top 50. Easily. Easily, Josh. Easily. It's amazing that you know, based on his first couple of games, that was the narrative that was coming out. And then you can just capitalize to the absolute shitter. And that people did. And that's when people didn't veto that necessarily. But obviously, if you put that trade together now, people go, man, what are you talking about? Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal. This is bullshit. This is clearly not right. But that's why you don't vote on opinion. Like, the guy that traded away Jaylen had those two strong games. And someone might have said to you, man, what are you doing? Young guy, Gordon Hayward's gone down. Yeah, Beal, don't worry about it. You know what? Jaylen's got top 15 upside. And they could have vetoed it based on that. It's why it's bullshit. Just another reason why it's bullshit. because things can change at any point. You're not here to police how people view things. You're here to stop them cheating. And that is why we don't have league votes. On to the Lakers, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma. He went bananas. 28 points in 27 minutes with 5 triples. This is an eerily reminiscent line for what he did in the preseason and the start of the year. High scoring, insane efficiency, not much else. Where you look at it and you go, well, that shooting can't continue, and then the numbers are going to drop, which is what we've seen from him over the last 2 weeks, is a lot of his production has fallen by the wayside. Of course, he's still a guy to own, and he only played 27 minutes, but that is a pretty sexy line. Jordy Clarkson, big game, third in a row, 22-5-4 with 2 steals in 34 minutes. Working out what's going to happen with him is not ideal. There was plenty of time when Lonzo Ball was out and he was playing 17 minutes a night, and Tyler Ennis was playing 25, and Alex Caruso and the mitten Gary Payton II was getting all this playing time as well. And then the last three, or the last two before this one, with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope out and Brandon Ingram limited, he got big minutes. And I thought, oh, you know what? With KCP back, with Ingram back, he's probably not going to get as large a minutes because Luke hasn't liked what he's seen previously when Lonzo's been out. But that wasn't the case here. Short term, sure, while Ball is out, add him. But apart from that, forget it. He's just not a good fantasy player. Randall had a 14-14 double-double, while Nance had 11-9-26. And Randall's a 12-teamer. Nance is a borderline, but probably is a guy to own, while Brandon Ingram just stunk. 2 of 11 for 7 points, but 9 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block. And they're the sort of lines that you want a guy like Kyle Kuzma to put up when he doesn't have the good shooting nights. Now, Kuzma's more likely to have good shooting nights than what Brandon Ingram is, but if he could add those other things, then we're talking about a perennial top 50 type of threat. But at this stage, we're not there. Caldwell Pope, only the 24 minutes. He struggled 8-4, but still probably is a guy that you want in your standard leagues. All right, that does it for all the action from Tuesday's games. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to look at the player spotlight, which is going to be shone brightly onto DeJounte Murray, the starting point guard of the San Antonio Spurs. And we're going to preview the 9 games for Wednesday for DFS. I think I've fixed the YouTube issue now. It comes when I have to remove a song for copyright reasons. So therefore, some of the bands that have submitted songs to me, if you're giving me this auto copyright warning on YouTube, I'm just not going to be able to play your songs anymore. So I apologize for that. Because even when I file a thing saying, hey, you know what, this band gave me the song and enabled me to play it, that copyright company says, nah, we don't believe you, bad luck, even if I provide the evidence. So I'm just not going to bother with it. So I do apologize with that, because I don't want to stuff up the audio anymore now that I've isolated what the problem is. We're going to give you a song from Jake McKelvey and the Countertops. The song is called Oh, the Ghost, and then I'll be back to talk some DFS.
Come to me, all you face of mistakes, and make me appear in the margin. I don't care how long it will take, 'cause I only want to enlarge it. And following me to the scene is doing me a great disservice, and making a mess out of me is really only doing me harm. It's really only doing me harm. And oh, the ghost was only in my dreams. It isn't in my closet, and you won't go searching with me, 'cause I have already lost it. And when it goes into my bed and out of the window before you, well, I will be laughing, and then I'm probably gonna start to explore. Yeah, I'm probably gonna start to explore.
All right, guys, we are back. Let's get that player spotlight going, and we're going to shine it, as I said, on DeJounte Murray of the San Antonio Spurs. He has already won the Young Gun of the Night award for today, but let's have a look at what he's been doing over the course of the season. In 18 minutes per game this year, in 49 games, he is the 228th ranked player And a lot of that's because his efficiency hasn't been great. 42% from the field, 71% from the line, 19% from three, for a true shooting of 47%, averaging just 6.6 points. But what he has been excellent at this season is rebounding as a point guard. 5 rebounds a game in 18 minutes is a ridiculously high number. 2.5 assists per game is also super high, and a steal per game, and 0.3 blocks per game. As per 36 value for the season, he is the 34th ranked player, averaging per 36 minutes 13.5, 5 assists, 2 steals, 0.6 blocks. And if you got that efficiency up, we're talking about an elite prospect in that regard. Over the last 15 games, he is the 7th ranked player in per 36 numbers, averaging 13.5 and 10.5 with 4.5 assists, 3.2 steals and a block per game. And the efficiency is still sucking, so still room to improve there. He has hit a grand total of just 3 triples for the season, so he's never going to be a threat here. As I said earlier, you know, what we saw from him today, the scoring, the efficiency, you know, the high steal numbers, it comes against a Cavs team that allows point guards to put up numbers big consistently. But over the last 2 weeks for DeJounte Murray, and he started 2 of those games, and he's come off the bench for 5 of them, he's played 23 minutes. 9.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 2.5 steals. And he is the 65th ranked player. But as something I stress a lot, high steals pushes you 40, 50, 60 spots up in the rankings. And his steal numbers here are through the roof, and that has pushed him up. But in those 7 games, a 47% shooting rate, he's at 86 from the line for a true shooting of 51, really, really pushing it forward and looking good. I think he should be owned in, I think he's a must-own 12 team. He's a must-own 14 team leaguer. No debate about that whatsoever. Someone asked me today if they should drop Gerald Green for him. That is the easiest decision you will make this day, on or any day really this season. He is a must-own guy in 14 team leagues, and probably 12s, and maybe for 10s. But if we look what he did to begin the season in the first 7 games where he started, and then he lost that starting job to Pat Mills before Tony Parker returned, he had a 16-5-2. Yep, 8-10-6, 2 steals. Nice game. 16-14-6, solid. But then 0-3-3, 7-4-4, 4-6-1, 10-5-4. So some good games and some bad games. But if we look at the other starts he's had for Parker during the year, he had a 17-11-5 with 3 steals game. He had an 8-14-4 game. He had a 14-6-4. He had a 4-9-3. He had a weird one where he had 4 points and 1 rebound. Then he went 7-6-6-2-1, 14-11-5-3-1. So obviously some really, really strong performances there in there for Murray, and he has been improving. The rebounds are a consistent thing. The steals are through the roof for this guy, just consistently putting up big numbers in that category, and gets more blocks than your average point guard as well. If he could get the shooting going, which I'm not, have zero confidence in him doing that, he is a guy that potentially is a top 30 fantasy challenger in the next 3 years. But he needs to get that scoring going. He can't be out there averaging 10 points per game. Like, the only sort of guy who can do that is Draymond, because of his extremely high rebounds, blocks, and steals, and efficiency. Or Rubio in the past, who's been a top 30 guy with, you know, 10 assists per game and 2.5 steals. Murray's not a 10 assists per game sort of guy. He can be a 10 rebound or 8 rebound guy and 2 steals guy and 1 block guy and 5 assists, but he needs to bring 16, 17 points per game, and I think he can develop into that. I'm really, really excited about his long-term dynasty prospects. As I said, I think top 30 is a realistic ceiling to imagine, and I think that he could finish this season as a top 100 guy from now on. He's probably not going to be there if we look at overall value, just because he started off the season and he's currently sitting 228th with less than half of the season to go. But he can push from now on and be a top 100 guy, maybe even a top 80 guy for the rest of the year if he can keep a high steal rate going. I feel confident with the rebounds. I feel confident with the assists. I feel confident with the blocks. I don't with the scoring or efficiency. And it's going to come down, can he be 1.5 steals or 2.5 steals? 2.5 steals, and he's a really valuable commodity. 1.5, he's okay. And that's where the big change is going to come, or the big thing we've got to pay attention to is going to come. He has significantly improved a lot of his advanced numbers. Still not looking sensational there, but his PER has gone from 9.6 to 12.7. His box score plus minus has jumped 4 full points from negative 4.8 as a rookie to negative 0.8. And more impressively this year, his defensive box score plus minus is at 3, which is an elite number. Not that that tells you everything about defense, but it's a big positive. And his on-off is out of control. Last season, negative 5.8. This year, positive 8.1. It is a huge, huge jump for a guy like Murray in his second season at the age of 21 as well. A lot of these indicators are telling us, and of course, the fact that Popovich made the subtle change about a month ago to move Mills more to the two to give Murray, because when Parker came back, Murray was out of the rotation. They took him out and they played Mills as the backup point guard. But what they then did was move Mills across more to play as the backup two. They took 4 or 5 minutes off Dan Green at times. We saw minutes of Green at the three when Kawhi was out and Gay was out and Anderson was out with that knee problem as well. But they went more with DeJounte as the backup point guard rather than the third stringer. In fact, he hasn't had under 10 minutes per game since the 5th of January. So we're talking a month. He hasn't had under 9 minutes per game since the 26th of December. So in a fairly consistent role, that was an indication that things were pushing his way and Popovich had liked what he's seen, and now he's moving into the starting role. And I don't think there are any games that he plays under 20 minutes per game for the rest of this year, probably not under 25. And that's going to be really key. He's not going to hover around 30 a game. I think he's going to be lower than that, but I don't think that we're getting any scenario where he's under 20. His fouls can still be a problem for DeJounte. That's something he does need to pay attention to, but his aggressiveness defensively is really going to keep him on the court, plus way more aggressive offensively than what he has been previously. What he's also done this year is he's starting to take shots closer to the rim, which obviously is going to be a positive thing for his field goal percentage as he moves forward. He's a decent finisher, 56% at the rim, which is not a bad number. It's not elite, but it's not terrible. He just needs to get that three-point percentage going. He was a 39% three-point shooter last year, 19 this season. So obviously the truth of that matter fits somewhere in the end. Last year he was 9 of 23, this year 3 of 16. So we're talking extraordinarily small sample sizes there for his three-point shooting. His one season at Washington, he was 34 of 118. So we're talking about 29% there, which is better than what he is last year and worse than what he was last season. But he is a guy to pay some attention to. Weirdly, he is 9th in the entire NBA in defensive box score plus minus, which again doesn't tell you everything about defense, but it does show you, and you can watch him on the court. He is a solid defender who is going to get quite good in that area, and I do like his long-term prospects quite a bit. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineups on FanDuel. Alfred Payton, 45.9. DeJounte Murray, 52.5. Garrett the Owl Temple, 41.9. Marcus Smart, 38.4. Kyle Anderson, 37.9. LeBron had 47.3. LaMarcus had 51.1. Kuzma, 37.3. And Will Cauley-Stein had 54.8. And that was a total of 407.1. And that cost $59,700. Over on DraftKings, Steph had 53.5. The Owl, Garrett Temple, 45. Kyle Kuzma, 40. Jarrett Allen, 31.25. Cauley-Stein at 49.75. Lord Alfred Payton, 45.25. Aldridge at 49.5. And DeJounte at 49.5 as well. And that was a total of 363.75. And that cost $49,800 dues. We do have 9 games up on the slate for a Wednesday in the NBA, so let's get stuck into looking at those. The first one we're going to look at is the Phoenix Suns and the Indiana Pacers, and at this point, I don't know if Greg Monroe is going to start. Jay Triano hasn't mentioned that. He started the last game and took Tyson Chandler out of the rotation. Is that a permanent thing? I don't know. I think I'm 50-50 on that at the moment. So we could be seeing something there for Greg Monroe with some value, or it could be back to the status quo of Chandler starting and Alex Len coming off the bench. Marquise Chris is questionable for Phoenix, so if he is out, that does give Len some more minutes, and it gives Dragan Bender and Jared Dudley extra run. But Dudley had a good game in the last one. Bender's been pretty flat lately. Neither of them are strong DFS options. For the Pacers, it could be the return of Miles Turner, who is questionable with his elbow injury. Obviously, his return would really limit Domantas Sabonis, and you've got TJ Leaf questionable as well. If Turner plays, it does take a little bit of the shine off a guy like Thaddeus Young, who'd been playing quite well in Turner's absence. At point guard, Dazza Collison, 5,400. The minutes have been okay for him. This is a very, very good matchup. So I like using him here. I think he's got a safe floor. Maybe he doesn't have an extraordinary ceiling, but 40 points wouldn't be out of control or wouldn't be unexpected if he could get that. But I think a 30-pointer is a realistic type of scenario for Daz in this one. While Corey Joseph at 4,500, I have zero interest in that one. Isaiah Cannon and Tyler Ulis. Cannon is still priced cheaper than Ulis, even though he is playing more minutes than him, but still the upside is very, very low for Cannon. I'm not all that keen. Devin Booker's at 8,100, really troubled in the last game. Only 35 points with Malcolm Brogdon's defense on him. 35 is still pretty bloody good, but at 8,100, it's not cutting it. I still think that he is worth a look here, even though the Pacers shooting guard defense has been one of the better ones across the NBA in recent times. On the other side, you've got Victor Oladipo, and shout out to Victor Oladipo, who I found out today is a twin, and his twin sister's name is Victoria, which is just ludicrous. I love stupid names. I love stupidity in naming. It always amuses me to see, well, here's my twins, Victor and Victoria. And what's your name? I'm Victor Sr. Like, what's going on here? And then that always brings me back to Lance Stevenson's dad being called Lance and his brother being called Lance with a T-Z, L-A-N-T-Z. Just ludicrous name. I just think to myself, I can't imagine calling my son Josh. I can't imagine it. Or calling my daughter Joshette, which is basically what we're doing here with Victoria. It's stunning to me. Can't get my head around it. And I'm sure there's plenty of you who are named here as juniors or the thirds. It is just a weird thing to me. And maybe, again, it's probably not weird to you because you're used to it. To me, it is a weird thing to name your kid after yourself and then to name your daughter after yourself by putting an extra letter at the end of your name. My son plays against a girl in tennis and her name is Wayne A. So I'm guessing her dad's name's Wayne and he just threw an A at the end of the name. I went, you know what? Wayne A. Here we go. What? Anyway, that's way too much digression. Oladipo, 9,900. That is very, very expensive for Vic, but this is a team where he can blow up. He can go for 70 against the Suns. I wouldn't be looking at it at cash at that price, but there is clear tournament upside there for Oladipo. At small forward, Lancey Stevenson, the aforementioned Lance Stevenson, 3,900. The matchup is really intriguing here, and that price is also quite interesting. So he is in my GPP tournament pool, while Bojan Bogdanović always has the ability to drop a big one, but you're never going to rely upon him for any cash spot. TJ Warren's at 7,100. That feels like a pretty strong cash sort of an option. You're going to get 35 out of TJ most nights that he's out there. Well, Joshy Jackson at 42, I have zero interest in that. At power forward, Thaddeus is at 6,200. I feel still okay about using him given the positivity of the matchup. The Miles Turner situation is a little bit of a worry for his value, but I still think he's pretty good to use here. While Sabonis at 6,700, there's no way with Miles Turner returning. Even if Turner was out, I don't think I'd want to spend that much on Sabonis. And Chris and Bender are fades also. At center, I don't know if Greg Monroe is going to play. If he starts, I think he's a worthy option. Tyson Chandler at 4,900, I have very little faith there. The good thing is, of course, that this is the first game of the day, so we're going to get that news hopefully out early enough. As for Turner, he's at 6,600. His last game before the elbow injury, he dropped 38. At 6,600, he is absolutely a GPP guy, of course, assuming that he is ready to go and play, which is what we're currently assuming. On DraftKings, Oladipo I like way more over there, 9,200. I think that's strong value for cash and for tournaments. Booker at 85 is probably a little bit too highly priced. Sabonis still a fade. Warren's still strong for cash, and I still like Thad for cash too. Dazz Collison, too high, and that center situation still. There's just too many unknowns to really get too in-depth with how we're looking at that. The next game, the Pelicans and the Charlotte Hornets. The Battle of the Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 2. The total is 222.5. The Richie Beno special. Mick Kidd-Gilchrist missed the last game with his axillary abscess. The boil under his arm. He is probable, so he is ready to go. The Pelicans, no injuries to report in this game, which is good news. At point guard, Kemba Walker is at 8,400. He has been putting up big numbers. 39 average over his last five, 44 over his last three. I think that it's a good matchup for him here, and I'm okay with using him as a cash point guard here. Rondo's at 5,100. That's just pissing money down the drain. Same with Ian Clark and Michael Carter-Williams. At shooting guard, Batum's at 6,000. Has been much improved lately, but I don't like that price, and there's limited upside there. While Jezza Lamb's at 45, and he had a big game with Kid Gilchrist out in the last one. 33 points in 27 minutes, but again, opportunities are limited when everyone is healthy on the wing, so it's hard to really rely upon him. Drew Holiday just crushing it, and weirdly, just because of a poor shooting night against Chicago, his price has plummeted by $500 down to $7,800. It is a 9-game slate, so you might be able to find a better option than Drew, especially with a negative matchup against shooting guards, but still, he has been really, really strong, so don't completely count him out. Etwan Moore's at 4,800. I don't really enjoy that at all. Darius Miller, Kid Gilchrist, nothing to see. At power forward, Marvin Williams, 4,600. Had looked good for a stretch, has gone cold again. I don't hate it. I think the price is probably too high on FanDuel, but his value is going to be there on some other sites. While Frank the Tank at 4,500 is just not appealing to me in the slightest. Tone Davis, 11,800 for Tone. He averages 70 points against the Hornets the last three times. Averages 70. That is bananas. I like Tone here for cash. I like him for tournaments. And of course, Boog is up to 12,500 because he just casually dropped a 98 in the last game against the Bulls, double overtime. Pretty unlikely that he goes for 98 again. And that $1,000 price rise paired with a Dwight Howard matchup puts him on the fade zone. As for Howard, 9,200 for Dwighty, putting up some good numbers. In fact, his lowest score over the last five is 43, and that is a bloody good floor. The problem you have, of course, is playing against Boog and Tone. That can limit him, so I wouldn't feel strongly about using Dwight despite the recent good form. I think it might be actually a good spot to fade him with many, maybe just going with the recent form levels that he's been showing. Let's go to the next one. It's the Jazz. It is the Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 2, and the total is 201.5. Rocket Rodney Hood is questionable with his lower leg contusion, while Reggie Bullock is questionable with a thumb injury. Reggie Bullock is not really doing too much for us, but if he is out, Stan Johnson becomes a very, very lowly priced option who has been more aggressive offensively, and maybe that could be a GPP play if Bullock is out. And also don't rule out the fact that Johnson may actually start, or Tone Tolliver might be in play there as well if Reggie Bullock is out. At point guard, Ish Smith's at 6,500. That's just too high for a bloke of Ish of limited upside, which is what he is. Langston Galloway's taken over the backup role. Not interested there. While ravishing Rick Rubio at 4,900. I don't see it for Rick. Sorry, mate. Love him, but I just not interested. In fact, this is just a really big stay away game a lot of the time. Now, if Rocket Rodney Hood plays at 4,800, he would be a guy that you'd slot into your tournament pool, but you would never want anything to do with him in cash. While Avery Bradley is jacking shots at an extraordinary rate. He's at 5,200, and I don't want anything to do with that. The Don Mitchell, big price drop, 7,400. That brings him back into the game. His numbers have dipped. He's under 30 average over the last three. He dropped a 14 in that last one. But he's still got the 50-point upside. He's still got a comfortable floor. So I think he's okay to use, but I wouldn't be latching on and locking him in as a must-play guy. Small forward Jingle and Joe's at 5,000. Nah, better the options there. Stan Johnson, 37, as I touched on earlier. If Reggie Bullock's out, I'd be interested in having a punt on him, but that's about it. While Joe Johnson and Bullock aren't really helping anyone's cause. At power forward, Toby Harris. That is a big price, 7,200. Slow pace, good defense. That is a strong fade at that price. Give me 6,200 and now we're talking with Toby. But at 7,200, there are going to be better ways to spend that money. Derek Favors, Jonas Jerebko, Eric Maul, and some other power forwards. Favors at 5,700 with Gobert back is not an appealing option. All-star game snub, Andre Drummond. At 10,300. And if you're going to call someone a snub, as all the people on the Player Zone broadcast are saying, Chris Paul should have been in, tell me who you're taking out. That's as simple as that. And I'll tell you that Andre Drummond, I think, should have been in over Dwight Howard. It's simple to me. That's who I think is a snub. But you can't say that Chris Paul should have made. Or whose spot is he taking? Paul George was a snub. Whose spot are they taking? I do think that Paul George should have been in. I would have had him in ahead of Klay Thompson. But you can't just say, oh, yeah, Paul's a snub, this guy's a snub, this guy's a snub. Tell me who you're taking out. And then we can have a discussion, and then we can argue the merits of it back and forth. But you got to tell me who you're taking. You can't just sit there and, yeah, well, how can you knock PG-13? Well, tell me who you're taking out. Simple as that. Anyway, Drummond, 10,300 against Gobert. Yuck. Now, Drummond could come out and put up a big game because he's pissed at not being in the All-Star game. We know all of that. I just think it's too expensive. As for Gobert at 7,900, the numbers have been pretty strong, but that price also is not something that's super appealing to me. I could throw Gobert into a tournament. You know, a six-block upside really gets you going in a FanDuel-type contest, but nothing really to see with either of those guys in this game, I don't believe. On DraftKings, actually, I didn't do the Pelicans-Hornets game for DraftKings, so let's do that now. I love Tone Davis at 10.8. Boog's gone up to 11.6, which is all right. Kemba at 8,000, I think, is pretty strong. And Marvin Williams, here he is at 4,100. Totally in for that. I can see that. 82 for Dwight Howard is also a strong option on DraftKings. Now, let's look at this game that I am talking about, the Jazz and the Pistons on DraftKings. Toby Harris, again, a much more reasonable price, 6,200. And I totally think that is cash usable and tournament usable. And Ish at 5,600, I changed my tune on him as well on DraftKings. So that price is a more reasonable price. I think that, yeah, you've got a decent chance of him getting to 30, whereas, you know, to him to get to 37 or 38 on FanDuel is pretty unlikely. So I like both of them. The Don Mitchell at 72, similar to FanDuel. Drummond at 94 is definitely more in the mix, but more tournament than cash. And Gobert at 74 is still in that fade territory to me. Let's go on to the next game. We're going to look at the Bulls. They are taking on the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 5, and the total is 218.5. Chris Dunn is already ruled out for this one. Jared Bayless is questionable in Philadelphia, and Jim Young is questionable with an illness. Timothy John McConnell has been ruled out. He has to attend his father's funeral, so obviously thoughts go out to him and his family, so he will be out of this game. So that's going to mean more minutes for Benny Simmons and an opportunity for a guy like Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot again, and Bayless, if he plays, could be in the mix there too. At point guard, Bayless is at 3,900. You don't want anything to do with him in cash. This guy is averaging 6 points in the last three games in 20 minutes per game. While Jaren Grant at 6,300, that's a big price bump, but he's going to have that starting job to himself. He got 51 in that double overtime game in 47 minutes, and it's not like Ryan Arcidiacono or Antonio Blakeney are coming and really demanding all these minutes away from Jaren. So at 6,300, I don't think that he is a bad option there at all. At shooting guard, Justin Holiday is at 5,600. I feel like Holiday is a limited upside, decent floor guy. He's getting a ton of minutes. The numbers are okay, 25 over the last five, and that's not a bad cash play for him. Zachy Levine's at 51. He had 26 in 24 minutes, so the minutes limit being lifted a little bit. At 5,100, I don't hate that. I think that there is more GPP value in that, and he comes in priced a little bit lower on some of the other sites where he really does become an option, but I don't hate that for him on FanDuel. Justin Anderson at minimum salary, the Hammer Denzel Valentine at 5,000, David Nwaba at 3,700. They aren't really getting my anything going. Dario Saric, 6,300, just loving what he's cranking out at the moment. Almost feel like you're going to get 32 out of him every night, so I like that for cash. I like it for tournaments. While Benny Simmons at 8,700, the numbers have regressed for him recently, but he did have 55 the last time they played the Bulls. There's going to be more ball handling for him with McConnell out. So at 8,700, he is high up on my tournament ranks, and he is a cash option as a high-priced guy, given the situation. PunchBob Shiploke's at 39, that's a fade. Or Nick Mirotic at 6,500. Just feels like it's $1,000 too high, so he is in fade territory. Lowry Markkanen in 6,700. Much rather take Lowry than Mirotic for that $200 more. Lowry had 44 against the Pels, and I feel good about him getting to 30, much better than I do about Mirotic at this stage. At center, the process, Joel Embiid, $11,000. Very, very expensive there for Joel. I think he's worth a look. He's got that massive upside. He's there for tournaments. He's averaging 44 over the last five. I don't feel good about him for cash, but I do feel like he is a tournament guy. As for Lopez, $4,200, very, very little interest in using Big Bob there. Let's go on to DraftKings. Now, Embiid at 9,700 on DraftKings, all over it. Love it for cash, love it for tournaments. Benny Simmons at 76, I think, is super strong as well, while Šarić at 6,400. Even though he's more highly priced on DraftKings and on FanDuel, I still think that that is a really, really strong value play. Jerron Grant at 58 is also good, but there are so many other value options on DraftKings that he moves a little bit down the pecking order. I didn't talk about Bob Cove. I'm not really interested in him, tournaments only. Justin Holliday, 57, probably too high on DraftKings, and Mirotić is in that fade territory there also. Let's go on to the next one. We've got the Raptors. We've got the Hawks. The Raptors are favored by 6, and the total is 215.5 points. At point guard, Dillon Wright, 4,800. Had a strong game in the last one. I see little upside and a low floor, so that makes him a fade in this spot, while Lowry at 7,900. I love the matchup for Lowry. The numbers for him have been strong lately. I think he is an absolutely fine cash play in a really strong matchup. As for Schroeder, negative matchup against Lowry, but his numbers have been relatively consistent with a 39-point average over his last five at 7,400, and that's a big price drop too. I think you shouldn't be scared about using him in cash, and he does have a little bit of tournament value. Delaney and Van Vliet, not much there. Love DeRozan, 8,800. Great opponent for him here to drop a 50. I think he's got that opportunity to do that here, so I like him for cash. And then Kent Bazemore at 5,700. The numbers for Baze have been a little bit depressed lately, but 5,700 is not a crazy price. And if you're looking for that mid-priced guy, I think he's in play, despite the lackluster returns recently. Bellinelli, no. Small forward, CJ Miles, 3,800. Just nothing to really get me too excited. While the artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, is down to 5,200. He had 30 points in the last game. I like Prince. I think you can use him in cash. He's not a high priority guy, but he can be used. And he's got some tournament upside. Even though everyone's well down on him, he did have 30 points in that last game. At power forward, you've got the Baptist, John Collins at 5,600. That's a $600 price dip, but it's still in the too high category, so he is a fade on FanDuel. Siakam's at 39, not interested. Well, Ibaka at 5,700 has been just piss poor. 16-point average over the last five, 14 over the last three. It's a continual slump, but in some spots, he is worth it. At 5,700, he probably isn't. I think on one of the sites, he's like 49 or 4,800, and that piques my interest, but not on FanDuel. Jonas Valanciunas has played very, very well against the Hawks. At least 21 minutes in both games this season. He averages 32 in the last three outings against this team. It is a great matchup. Centers against the Hawks, it's almost like centers against the Nets. It is a positive situation. 5,400, but really tough to rely upon the minutes. Is it 26 minutes? Is it 13 minutes? Give him 26 and he is smashing that value. He is dropping you 32 or 33. Give him 13 minutes, he might have 12. And that is the GPP risk with Jonas Valanciunas. Jakob Poeltl's at 4,000. Been sort of consistent in what he's been doing, but it's not enough to pay for a $4,000 price tag. While the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman's at 5,500. I just want him to start. I don't know what this bullshit is with Miles Plumlee. Dedman's still getting minutes, but he should be getting three or four more per game. There is no need for, like, there's literally no need for any Plumlee to play in the NBA except for Mason. Even then, he's getting too much playing time. Undertaker at 5,500, it's a low upside, low floor play, which are the types that, you know, that I do like to avoid. On DraftKings, we're looking at a bunch of guys here. DeRozan at 83, Lowry at 79, Schroeder at 68. I can't stress how much I love Schroeder at 68 enough. Ibaka at 49. Now, that's what we're talking about. That's the price where I say, you know what? I think this is a bounce back for Serge. It's a good opposition for him, and that's a good spot. And Bazemore at 52, also cash. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince is at 48 here, so he can comfortably get that value back. And the Baptist, John Collins at 46. I love that for a tournament. Give him 27 minutes and he shits on that number. Give him 21 minutes because Miles Plumlee has to play, then we just shit in our hands and eat it pretty much. Sorry for the imagery. The next game we're going to take a look at, it is the Spurs. It's the Grizzlies. It's San Antonio on a back-to-back. So how much are we going to see of LaMarcus Aldridge? Will Tony Parker play at all? Will Manu be back? Will Powell be back? Will we get limited Dan Green minutes first half only? Will we get big Bryn Forbes or Davis Bertans numbers? It's a shit opponent. Who knows what's going to happen? There's so much uncertainty with this Spurs team. But let's go ahead and get DeJounte Murray at 5,200 and go, bang, you know what? Let's lock that in. You're giving me huge numbers. He is going to be north of 80% owned in cash games, would be my guess. it's going to be huge. So maybe a tournament fade is in use, but he is in a great spot here with potentially Parker and Manu being out, meaning he plays 33, 34 minutes as Mills plays a lot at the two. Maybe Dan Green is limited as well. So it's a great opportunity. The other point guards in this one, Andy Harrison, Pat Mills. Yeah, Millsy at 4,000 if we see that Tone Parker's out. Absolutely could be used as a GPP guy, but I'd be more over Murray in cash. Mario Chalmers at 36. For the Grizzlies, I didn't touch on this. Chandler Parsons is out. Jim Ennis is out. Jermichael Green is out. And Jarrell Martin is listed as questionable with a left knee and left ankle issues. So they are some concerns there. But we know Jermichael is out. So that can give, well, not Jermichael, but the fact that Parsons and Ennis are out, it pushes Andy Harrison and Dylan Brooks more to the two and the three. So that does open some minutes for Mario Chalmers, even though he has been bad. He's averaged 21 over the last five. And when you come in just $100 over minimum, I don't hate using that for cash to put in some other high-priced guys across other games, your Lowry's, your DeRozan's, your Embiid's, your Simmons's, your Dwight Howard even, like any of these, you know, high-priced guys, Dame Lillard, Jim Harden, Chrissy Paul, there's many options out there, and getting 22 out of Mario Chalmers at 3,600 with all those absences, it sounds dumb on the surface, but it could actually help you construct a pretty strong lineup. At shooting guard, Green's at 4,500. I couldn't fade that enough. Manu's at 41, fade there as well, while Tyreek down to 7,900 because his numbers have dropped. Now, I would love this in any other spot, but not against the Spurs. Sorry, Tyreek, I won't be looking at you against this San Antonio team. One guy that I could look at is Wayne Seldon Jr. He had 10 points in 14 minutes in the last game before his ejection. He's at 3,700, and again, the absences on the wing and Ben McLemore being shithouse, I think he's in line for 25-plus minutes here. I think he's got it. Well, not in line. I think he's got a chance to get to that, and he could easily drop you 25 or 26 fantasy points. He's at 34.5 points is his highest for the year. He's at 33 points per 36 minutes so far in his last five games. You give me 25 points in 28 minutes, which is, again, a possibility. I'll happily take that at 3,700. I'd probably feel safer taking Chalmers, but I think Seldon does have the higher upside in this spot for Memphis. Mike Henry's at 3,800. He had 28 points in 16 minutes in the last game on the wing. He's a small forward, no Parsons, no Ennis. An opportunity for Mick Henry as well. He is a GPP type of guy that I imagine will have decently low ownership. Brittany Forbes at 37 is always a GPP guy, but it's going to be more dependent on if guys actually sit out for San Antonio. Kyle Anderson, 6,200, just crushing those numbers recently. I feel okay about him in cash, averaging almost 40 across the last three. 6,200 is not a high level for him to get to. He's doing it in so many areas. Jarrell Martin at 4,600. If Jarrell Martin plays, that is bang. That's lock in for cash, but we don't know. That's the problem because Jermichael's out, so he's like a 30-minute per game guy looking at it. Now, if he is out, I don't know what they're going to do. Do we get 22 minutes out of Ivan Rabb? Do we get Brandon Wright exhumed and playing at starting power forward? Do they try the Marc Gasol-Deontay Davis combination front court? It's not like they can play Jim Ennis and Chandler Parsons at the four because both those dudes are out as well. So could you see Mike Henry come in and start? Like, who bloody knows what JB Bickerstaff's going to do if Jarrell is out? But opportunities could open up for guys like Henry, for guys like Rabb, for guys like Deontay and Brandon Wright. So there are some opportunities that could arise. And even if it doesn't, Jarrell Martin's brilliant at 4,600. As for Marc Gasol, 8,100, maybe against his brother, maybe not. We don't know if Powell's going to play. Powell's at 6,100. I don't think I like either of them in the matchups or in the respective matchups and at their respective prices. Nothing really getting me too excited there. As for Bertans, he started today, had 27 points at 3,900, which is brilliant. So if Powell is out, we are all about getting some Davis Bertans action. On DraftKings, Murray's at 4,800. Love that. All about it. Jarrell Martin at 46. The same sort of story on FanDuel. LaMarcus Aldridge, I didn't talk about him on FanDuel. I think there's a risk that he plays maybe limited minutes. He'd be a tournament guy, not a cash guy, and the same thing happens for him on DraftKings. But Marc Gasol is more appealing on DraftKings. 7,300 for Gasol. Just a 32 average over the last five. But an opportunity is there for him, and I think he would be worth considering. But Spurs players just make it so tough, or Spurs teams going up against the Spurs, it makes it so tough to use them that would give me a level of pause with using Marc Gasol in this situation. I think that does it for DraftKings there. Let's move on to the next game. It's the Rockets taking on the Mavs. The Rockets are favored by 5.5, and the total is 217 points here. Salah Mejri was ejected in the last game, and also he was destroyed by his coach, who, kids, cover your ears, whose coach told him to get the fuck off the court. You've only scored 2 points, which was probably the most humorous thing we've seen this season from any sort of coach. It's up there with Take That for Data. You probably can't put it on a t-shirt, but Rick Carlisle telling his own player, you've only scored 2 points, get the fuck off the court, is definitely right up there. Devin Harris is questionable with a head injury, with a concussion, and I think it'd be doubtful that he plays, which opens up value for a few guys here for the Mavericks if that happens to be the case. At point guard, Chrissy Paul, 10,100 point guards against Dennis Smith, always a winning proposition. That's a high price for Chris. But him scoring 50 is not a crazy expectation, so I do think he's worth using here in this one. As for JJ Barea at 5,000, probably a little bit too highly priced, while Yogi Ferrell at 46. I think Yogi, if Devin Harris is out at 4,600, I would consider him a cash option. He's coming off 29 points in that last game against the Wizards. As for Smitty, he is at 6,600, Dennis Smith, averaging 34 over the last five and 37 over the last three. Chris Paul's a good defender. The Rockets are good against point guards. It's probably the spot where you would want to fade him, but I wouldn't count him out. I just wouldn't want to use him in cash at this stage. At shooting guard, Eric Gordon's down to 5,200. That's a reasonable price for Gordon. At the 6,000 mark, I was hating it. At 5,200, I can get behind using him there. Jim Harden's at 11,500. Big price rise, but we don't really care. He's got 50 written all over him here, so I do like using Jimmy. While Wes Matthews at 5,100. I think that that's a low upside cash option for 25 points. They're going to use him a lot defensively on Harden, so a lot of minutes coming Wes Matthews' way. And it is a positive matchup for him as well. Trevor Ariza was terrible in that last game. 5,100 for him. I think he can get back on track and return value for cash. While the pencil, Harrison Barnes at 7,100. I think this is a fade spot for him. At power forward, you got Dwight Powell at 39. You got Dirk at 49. I think both, Dirk I'm not interested in. Dwight Powell at 39, if they limit Dirk because he's getting roasted, I think Powell has some significant GPP upside, a 28, 30 point upside, which is not bad, but he's not going to be a first choice guy, while Ryan Anderson at 41, he just doesn't get it done. At center, Clint Capella, 7,800. I like the matchup for Capella. I hate the FanDuel price, so he would be a tournament look guy, but not a, that's look, not lock. But not really a cash guy, just given the predilection of Mike D'Antoni to limit his minutes to piss us off, which I'm sure is absolutely not his intention. On DraftKings, Jimmy, 10,900, love. Chris Paul, 9,500, also love. Trevor Ariza at 5,000, I think is strong for cash. Dennis Smith and Harrison Barnes, I think they're fade guys. While Capella is in a much stronger spot on DraftKings, 6,600, I'm about that on DraftKings for tournaments. Not really getting in there for cash, while Yogi Ferrell at 46 is similar to FanDuel, or the same price, but absolutely has value if Devin Harris gets ruled out. The Timberwolves and the Trail Blazers. Jim Butler, Jamal Crawford, both questionable. If they're out, then we're looking at Nemanja Bjelica again, and he becomes a really, really strong option. He was very good in that game against the Clippers, and he's at 3,600, so there is some value there for Bjelica. At point guard, Dame Lillard's at 9,400. I feel pretty good about using Lillard here against the Timberwolves. He averages 41 against them the last three times. I think that, you know, a 40 minimum for him is a realistic goal, so I do like that there. Shabazz Napier at 44 is not someone I'm keen on, while Jeff Teague at 6,000.
My name is Jeff.
42 in the last one for Teague with Butler out. If Butler's out, I'm in on Teague here. If Butler is in, that's probably looking more towards tournament rather than cash. But he could be a cash guy if Jim is out. CJ McCollum, 7,100. Tournaments only, not interested in cash. Well, Wiggo's at 6,100. All about Wiggins if Butler is out. Otherwise, I think he is in fade territory there. But in a GPP with news not coming before lock, Wiggins is an option there to really try and differentiate yourself. As for Jim, he is at 9,000. If he plays, I am in on that. Tom Thibodeau is not going to ease him back in. It's going to be, all right, Jim, you ready to go? Let's go. 50 minutes. All right. Cool, Tommy. We're ready. 9,000 for him would be fine if we know that he is playing, which we don't, of course, at this point. Bielitsa's at 3,600. That along with DeJounte Murray, would be one of the locks of the day if we hear that he is starting. At that price, we can bang that in, and we can bang that in very, very hard. That's what she said. At power forward, Al-Farouq Aminu, 5,200. Good old Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
People always ask me where that drop comes from. It's Gennaro Gattuso, Italian football player and now manager. I think he manages in England. I'm not a massive soccer guy, so you can correct me on that. Just type in Gattuso, G-A-T-T-U-S-O, onto YouTube. Gattuso sometimes may be good, and it will come up. It's about 1 minute into that clip where he's talking about Malakia and got his translator sitting next to him. And then about 1 minute into that clip, he drops this beauty.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
I think Aminu is a GPP guy, and that is it. Taj at 5,600, strong for cash, and really strong for cash, especially if Butler is out as well. And at centre, first-time All-Star, Karl Anthony Towns, 9,300. Love the matchup for Townsy here. This is a 40-point floor type spot. I think that is a really strong cash and tournament guy. While Yusuf Nurkic had 48 against the Nuggets, he's at 6,900, also known as 6,900.
Giggity.
Tournaments, really hard to trust him. Towns has been a really strong defensive presence recently, especially for DFS purposes, so that leaves him into those fade territories. On DraftKings, Lillard's at 8,900. Yeah, all about that. Love that. Townsy at 96, less strong for him on DraftKings and on FanDuel, and the same stuff about Bielitsa, about Towns, although Bielitsa at 4,300. Less interesting on DraftKings it is on FanDuel. Nurkic for GPPs. Teague at 63 is definitely only GPP if Butler happens to play. And Taj is a cash guy at 5,600. Let's now go to the last game of the night and wrap up this epic podcast. And by epic, I mean long, not necessarily good, as the kids are saying these days. Boston at the Clippers. DeAndre Jordan has been ruled doubtful. Jawan Evans is out with his abdominal issue. So it's time for them to unleash the table again. Montrezl Harrell in a matchup against Boston. Now, Boston on a back-to-back in LA. Teams on a back-to-back in LA, there could be an issue. Although, because it's a back-to-back, they don't have that day off to go out and get plastered. So maybe that's not too much of an issue. But they were sluggish against the Lakers today, so let's see how it goes against the Clippers. At point guard, Kyrie Irving, 8,200. That's totally fine for cash. There's upside there as well. Hard to go wrong with Kyrie at any point, really. Well, Milos at 4,900. With Jawan Evans out, I think that Milos at that price is a super cash option. Has some upside too, but a really strong cash one. Lou Williams at 86, love that. You feel really good about Lou's floor. He will probably play off the bench just to run the backup point with Jawan out, but I love Lou here for cash. Really strong guy there. While Ty Wallace at 4,400, probably not a strong option. He's had some good moments. He can block some shots. I don't think there's any safety in using Ty Wallace, though. Rozier, another point guard I should have talked about. I don't know why. I won't talk about him anymore. Not really much use in using him with everyone healthy. Marcus Smart's at 5,400. Played really well today. I think it's a good, or not, it's a very good matchup for him, but really more of a tournament guy. Wesley Johnson at 43 is a tournament guy as well, while Jaylen Brown at 57 also into that GPP conversation. At power forward, Blake Griffin, 9,000. I feel like it's too expensive against a Boston team that's very, very good at power forward defense. So I think that that's hard to use Blake there. Marcus Morris at 45 and Jason Tatum at 54. I'd much prefer Tatum, but he was absolutely shitful today, so maybe he can bounce back. I do like him, though, for cash here. At center, Al Horford, 6,700. No DeAndre. Absolutely fine with using Al. Cash option there. While Bainesy at 36, not much happening there. Didn't talk about the table, Montrezl Harrell, actually. 4,900. With no DeAndre, this is looking like a 30-pointer. And he is a cash lock who is going to have over 50% ownership. I am almost certain. On DraftKings, we're looking at Lou Williams at 81. We're looking at the table at 47 as both really strong options. Blake is still a fade. Kyrie at 86 is probably a little bit high. And Al Horford's appeal is taken away by his $7,100 price tag. Tatum and Teodosic also have some appeal on DraftKings. All right, let's now have a look and wrap this up by looking at the other sites over on Yahoo. If we look at tournaments, it's Joel Embiid, you got Benny Simmons, we got Jarrell Martin, Milos Teodosic, Ty Wallace, Wes Johnson, Dan Green, Dwight Powell, Stan Johnson, Wayne Selden Jr., Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot there also. Cash, it's Victor Oladipo. It's Dame Lillard. It's the table, Montrezl Harrell, Jaren Grant, DeJounte Murray, Jonas Valanciunas, Dwayne Dedman, Wes Matthews, Marv Williams, Jakob Poeltl. On Moneyball for tournaments, Embiid, Lillard, Clint Capella, Yusuf Nurkic, Jarrell Martin, Dwight Powell, Stan Johnson, and for cash and tournament guys, Marvin Williams, Zachy LaVine, Jaylen Brown, Serge Ibaka, DeJounte Murray, Jaren Grant, Thad Young, Montrezl Harrell, The Pencil, Dario Saric, Kyle Lowry, Kemba Walker, DeMar DeRozan, Townsley, Chris Paul, Oladipo, Harden, and Tone Davis. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, we've got Embiid, we've got Simmons, we've got McCollum, we've got the Chief, we've got Jarrell Martin, Yogi Ferrell, Lance Stevenson without a TZ, Mike Henry for the Grizzlies. And then for cash and tournaments, it's Luau Cabarro, it's Poeltl, it's Marvin Williams, it's Zach LaVine, Serge Ibaka, DeJounte Murray, Jaren Grant, Ish Smith, The Table, Montrezl Harrell, Dario Saric, DeRozan, Lou Williams, Victor Oladipo, Andre Drummond, Chrissy Paul. That wraps it up for today. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. It's a great way of supporting the podcast, and I'd much appreciate you can do that. Doing that, you can also find this podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can subscribe, leave a thumbs up, and leave a comment. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, and follow them on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Find me on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Andre Drummond.